Well, what I like about it is they're all relatively nice to each other,
Yeah.
and they don't all talk over each other.
No.
It's kind of nice. I like that.
That's interesting that you said that when we talked over each other.
Oh, but we apologized and said, "No, you first,
Yeah.
sir."
It's a very super professional podcast.
We are nerd appropriate, not nerd inappropriate. This is important.
Hello, fellas. Welcome to
Hey.
Episode 49 of the Nerd podcast called Rated NA.
Neat.
Do you think that the reason why people don't listen to our podcast is because they think it's perverse because it's rated NA?
I hope not.
I would not think so, but I guess it's possible. It's not like I put it in the porn section of iTunes.
It's not in the porn section.
I would hope that people...
Maybe that's why more people don't listen to it. Maybe we should sneak it over to that section.
To the porn section.
And get a whole new audience.
I would hope that people would be familiar enough with various rating systems to not confuse us with some sort of arbitrary rating of podcasts. I don't... Like it's NC-17 or something.
Yeah. Well, who knows? The internet's a strange and mystical thing.
Here's a fun fact. We couldn't even use that anyways because that belongs to, like, all the rating systems belong to the various organizations that own them.
Right.
So we legally could not use them anyways.
Oh. I see.
We would get our pants sued right off.
That's why we made our own rating system.
Yeah. Rated NA.
Rated not assholes.
What?
So that's what NA stands for.
I always thought it stood for nerd appropriate.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, that too. It's like a dual meaning. So what have you guys been up to this week? This is the start, by the way.
Is this really the intro?
Yeah.
Shit. I was just making stuff up.
It's a soft opening this time.
I'm done. Like I don't get made fun of anymore for my all right.
I like it, though, man. It's
nope,
not the same
too late.
Without it.
It's too, maybe I'll end it with the all right.
All right.
Even better.
So what you guys been up to? What's going on?
I managed to contract sickness again, which is kind of bogus. I went through like a whole work week feeling awesome, and then bell literally rings Friday afternoon, and as soon as like the door closed and the last student walked out, like mucus started flowing out of my face, and I just like, fell to the ground and started twitching.
You do work in a den of plague and.
Yeah.
You know.
Scum and villainy? Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty much like my room is pretty much Mos Eisley Cantina. And I'm like the bartender guy with like the pig nose. We don't serve your kind here. So yeah, work week was okay. I did get a chance to play some stuff a little bit. Maybe I didn't get a chance to game a whole lot, but I did kind of dabble in some stuff which we're going to talk about later. But other than that, it was a pretty good week. What about you, gentlemen?
Scotty.
I've been trying. I wanted to talk about it today. I've been desperately trying to finish The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. And because it's a Japanese game, it never ends.
I heard it's long.
It's like, hey, you've been here before. Let's come back here again and do something else. Oh,
yeah.
there's that boss again. Let's fight that guy again. Remember him? Yeah.
It is like I watched you play it when I was in town the other week, and it is pretty much I know why I don't like Zelda games. Like, it's not that I don't think they're bad games. It's like Ash and puzzle games. I can't do it. I can't do the, like, running back and forth and solving a puzzle and then...
I will hand it to this particular game is that it's a little more linear than previous Zelda games in the sense that, yes, there are puzzles and it does get a little tedious at times, but I always feel like I'm moving forward and I'm not doing so much backtracking. Unless it's to revisit the same areas to do something else in those areas, which doesn't happen that often.
Right.
But like, I really do think this is probably one of the better games in the series, if not one of the best games in the series. So I'm really close, and I want to write something or talk about something, but I really want to finish it first before I do that.
Yeah.
Ash or Matt, what have you been up to?
Playing Triple Town.
Game was gonna say
owns me. And then I did a bunch of stuff for the podcast this week. I'm back on comic book subscription, so I'm picking my books again. So there's a couple things to talk about there. I've watched a bunch of movies for the Oscars again. I think I'm actually going. I think this death match, is making me watch all the movies, as opposed to the last time where I was like, "Well, I'm just gonna try and watch 10 movies," and then I never could finish it.
You just do three at a time.
Yeah, I do three at a time, and then I kind of pit them against each other. So, sorry, this is my cat is rubbing his face on my laptop. He's very bored right now.
Is that what kids call it these days?
Yeah. And then what else did I do? I turned on my Xbox, and I was going to get Gotham City Impostors last night, and I didn't end up getting it, but I'm like dying to play that game. And yeah, that's about it. So
the game's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. It looked awesome when I saw it, and it's Monolith, who I love, and I just that's all about me. So.
Lives forever.
Scott's favorite. Let's. Oh God. Do we talk about Scott? You're playing Skyward Sword, right? We already talked about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm on medication right now, so this is going to be an interesting.
Let's do the rundown.
Please do like some audio explosion there, Scott.
I'll try to find something for that. We'll make jokes. All right.
Yeah.
So today in the news, we're talking about Double Fine and what they amazingly did this week, which is absolute insanity. We were talking about Mass Effect Mobile and Facebook gaming. The FemShep trailer finally came out, and I think we all watched it, or at least I did, and I think Ash did. I don't know if Scott did. He did not, so he'll stay quiet. And then Blizzard's got some horrible news, of course, because when do they bring us good news anymore? And then for reviews, we are talking about our early impressions of Kingdoms of Amalur, the iOS's Hero Academy, Star Wars The Old Republic, our first 50. We've got somebody here who finished 50 levels, and it's not me or Scott, so we'll let you guess. We've got the Oscar challenge. This week was The Descendants, The Artist, and Hugo. I've got a trade paperback must-buy for Fear Agent, and then the issue of the week for my pulls, which is surprisingly Conan the Barbarian.
Nice.
And then our rated NA question is, what is the nerdiest Valentine's Day gift you've ever received? Are nerdy gifts still romantic?
Ooh.
Sweet. We have it's going to be a fun episode. There's a whole lot to talk about. And yes. It was a really busy news week, even if we didn't get a chance to play a whole lot of stuff. A lot definitely was going on. So
let's dive in.
I was going to say real quick, even though we didn't get a chance to play a lot individually, this was a pretty big week for releases as well.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like restarted the post-holiday cycle of gaming. So yeah, I think so. Pretty cool. Yeah.
So this week on, what was it, Wednesday, I believe? Wednesday night, I was sitting at my laptop and hanging out, and I saw a tweet from good friend of the podcast, Tim Schafer. Huge friend of the podcast. We talked to him probably what? I mean, exactly. So,
I mean, we've seen him at cons, right? Somebody has, right?
And basically,
he's my Facebook friend.
Basically, tweeted out saying, we want to do a point and click adventure, and we've been told by publishers that nobody wants those anymore. So we're taking it to Kickstarter, and we're going to see what you guys think. And they set up all these levels of goodness if you wanted to go to Kickstarter and donate. And I was like, that's awesome. So I wrote up a quick story, posted the video that they put up, which is really good, by the way. And it doesn't look like a video, but it totally is. If you click the big image on the Kickstarter page, it's a hilarious video where he walks around the studio talking about whether people want point-and-click adventures anymore.
And whether or not they want to see how the sausage gets made.
See how the sausage gets made, which is a funny video. And
the video was really funny.
Yeah.
And basically, in one day, they raised, was it $400,000 or $500,000 in a single day?
I think it was like up to $600 by the end of the first 24-hour period.
First 24-hour period, they were over $500,000. Within 48 hours, they were closing in on $1 million. We're now about a little over 3 days, and they are at $1.5 million pledged.
Yeah. With 31 days left.
And
it's
he said,
incredible.
He said they are $500,000 within the budgets of Iron Brigade stacking and costume quest.
That's incredible.
With no publisher.
Yeah, that's amazing. So do you think that that this is actually there is actually something I read that was kind of funny. And first of all, do you think this is the future of self-publishing? Do you think Kickstarter is the way to go, or do you think that it has its flaws?
I think it has its flaws. It's okay. So it's the same argument that got made when Radiohead put out their own album, which is like, oh, well, Radiohead did it. Why can't everybody else? And it's like, well, it's fucking Radiohead. And when Double Fine goes to the internet and says like, hey, give us some money, we're going to make a point and click adventure game, of course everyone's going to jump on board. I mean, it's Double Fine. Like, they make nothing but amazing games. If it was like Game Maker Y coming onto the Kickstarter and saying like, we're going to make a point and click adventure, I don't think it would have gained $1.5 million in 4 days. You know what I mean?
Maybe,
like
$5,000, but yeah, not like, 1.5 million.
I think Kickstarter is really good, and I think it's a great way for people to get projects off the ground, and I think it's a great way for fans to actually interact and feel like they have a stake in something. I don't know that I'm like willing to say it's the future of self-publishing. It's like a weird twist. Like, of course it works for Double Fine because they're Double Fine. Does it work for everybody that way? I don't think so.
No,
I think
it also
speaks more about publishers not knowing what fans want.
Yes.
Because
that's a really good point, because I mean, you know, obviously people want this or else they wouldn't have gotten that much money that quickly, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, you know, the thing is that everyone's probably going around right now saying, you know, we really need to find the next Gears of War or the next Medal of Honor, or we need to make the next Mass Effect game, which, you know, all of them are first person shooters, PS. And, you know, like, there are a lot of people like us, you know, like even last week we were talking about Trilobite games, point and click adventures, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then days later, Double Fine announces they want to do an adventure game. So, you know, there are fans of old games and old like style of games that like don't get any love in like the current gaming climate just because of what is popular right now, you know, sports games, FPS, like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is great. And, you know, I can't help but be a fanboy for Double Fine. Like, there's something really genuine about Tim Schafer.
Yeah.
And his honesty with the community. And I think a lot of people respect that. And the success of this project was really born out of that company being the way they are.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we're going to talk about Blizzard in a little bit here. And I'm just going to go ahead and talk shit. But, you know, when a company is honest with their fans and honest with their community, and they talk to them and they communicate, great things can happen.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's amazing about gaming in general, is we, you know, all of us, we have a voice and we like to, you know, banter back and forth with these people that we admire. And the fact that Double Fine gets the respect that they do because of this, I think it's great, you know?
And I was going to say, following him on Twitter right now is hilarious, because he's been reacting to this like over and over. Like, yeah. He went to Vegas there was a conference going on. He went there. Was it DICE or something? I think.
I think so.
And he was there and he was like tweeting, like, I'm about to get on the plane. I think we're going to break $1 million while I'm in the air. Like, and he was like, and responding to these things and like writing, you could tweet at him and he was responding to a bunch of people about it. I mean, it's cool to see him get really excited too about the fact that fans were like, holy shit, yes, please do this, you know? All right, talk about Mass Effect. Let's talk about these games.
So Mass Effect news. We have this is like the fever pitch is, you know, at this point we're at like 110.
Yeah.
There's shit coming out constantly. The art book drops early next week, so you're going to see a lot of that stuff that we saw a little while ago, but the community is going to get to see that. Information just came out about the two new iOS games, Mass Effect Infiltrator and Mass Effect Datapad. And so we have some details about those, and also the Facebook game, if you can really call it a game, is currently active. Let me start with that. Have you guys done that yet?
No. What is it? I'm iffy on Facebook games. So.
Well, it's not even really a game. It's like a Facebook page, basically, for Mass Effect, and there's like challenges you compete, and there's like there've only been two. The first challenge was like pretty much just take this message and post it on your own page. That was it. That was the first challenge, like Shepherd challenge or whatever. If you do that, time passes and eventually you do get a key sent to you for a avatar item for Xbox Live. So this is strictly for Xbox right now.
Okay.
So I did that. I got that. I got a really pretty awesome Normandy avatar prop. So it like flies around my avatar. It looks awesome. Totally worth just me spamming, you know. And the second challenge was unique. The second challenge was you had to write a pickup line for Liara and then post it to the community site. And then the like, I guess they picked a handful of ones that had the best pickup lines, and they gave them early demo access. Supposedly, there's going to be a new challenge every couple days, or you know, maybe twice a week, leading up to the launch of the game. But it's just a way to, you know, it's a marketing ploy, yeah, to get people to basically spam their friends and promote Mass Effect for
how do you guys feel about like a so like it's not like Mass Effect, we've talked about this before, Mass Effect is not a new product and it's not exactly unknown. I mean, it's clearly going to be one of the biggest selling video games this year, if not the biggest selling video game this year. Like, how do you guys feel about it when they're like, come like us on Facebook, or like post this to all your friends about our site, our game? And it's like, yeah, my friends probably know about you already if they're going to play, and otherwise they really don't need to know otherwise, you know. I mean, I don't know. I always feel weird when it's spammy like that. Like the pickup line one sounds awesome, and I think that's a really cool promotion. Like, I feel like when a game is this size, their promotions should be like nudge nudge wink wink to fans, and not so much like, hey, get your spammy friends to come look at our site.
Well, maybe you go ahead, Scott.
We talked about this. No, you. We we talked about this, I think, before in the context of like when I was sort of complaining about the transition between Mass Effect 1 and 2, where it became less of a like a RPG and more of a shooter. And you know, that at the time we said that the reason for that was because they were trying to appeal to a broader audience.
Right.
So maybe the purpose of this Facebook campaign is to like to pull in those people who might be on the fence.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
True.
Like, I think at this point everybody's aware of the game, and everyone that's sort of invested in it is clearly going to buy the game. But maybe those people, maybe they're trying to pull eyeballs away from Medal of Honor. I mean,
what is it
called? Modern Warfare.
Medal of Honor doesn't have that many eyes.
Yeah, I think they're trying to pull people away from other competing franchises at this point. Okay. You know?
No, you're absolutely right, and I think the idea is, okay, maybe if we do this big Facebook push, you know, we can sell, you know, 6 million copies as opposed to, you know, 3 to 5 million copies.
Right.
It's all about, you know, appealing to that new audience that maybe would have not picked the game up. A lot of the new trailers that they put up on the site are focused around like the heavy action of the game.
Yeah.
And so they like you guys said, they know the fans are coming back. Absolutely. But they want to attract a whole new group.
And I'm not dumb. Like, you know, it's just whiny. Like, you know, I just get annoyed with that. Like, it's specifically Facebook. I get really annoyed when like gigantic products, when it's like Coke is like, come like the Coke page. And I'm like, really? Like,
yeah,
I think everyone is aware of your brand at this point. Me liking Coca-Cola is not going to make my mom be like, oh, what's this Coca-Cola thing? And click, you know, come on. So
yeah, that's true.
But I understand. I would rather them sell more copies because that just means they'll probably do more stuff later on and have better games that come out. So
it's totally worth it for that avatar prop. It's really good.
Yeah. So what about the iOS games?
All right, iOS games. The first one is a third-person shooter called Infiltrator, and it's supposed to be very similar to the Dead Space iOS game. So people that have actually gotten their hands on it says it actually performs very well. You don't play as Shepard; you play as a rogue Cerberus agent, and it is actually a direct tie-in to the story of Mass Effect 3. So it's a little side story. The thing that is interesting about it, though, is your achievements that you get in the iOS game do link up to your EA account, so you can actually change your galactic readiness level by playing this iOS game. I know. So there's going to be a lot of things that are going to have an impact on your galactic readiness level, which is pretty much
But what is the galactic readiness
it's
level
like
going to have
boner.
An impact on?
Galactic readiness level is like a boner. So like
that's,
the more...
It's really what it sounds like.
The more, yeah, like the more stuff, like the more you get aroused, your galactic readiness level just continues to swell. And gets, you know, just raging
and
galactic.
And then you go online and you compare your galactic readiness level.
Yeah, I know.
It's buddies.
Like, oh, Matt's galactic readiness level is so much larger than mine. I'm going to need to get more iOS games. I'm going to need to buy an iPad so my galactic readiness level isn't so paltry.
Since they've made a decision to go iOS only, my galactic readiness level will not be – or galactic readiness level will not be anywhere near your guys. So
it's going
to
be a flaccid galactic readiness level.
It will.
I hope that internet can shorten this phrase into something internet speak sooner rather than later, because I'm getting tired of saying galactic readiness level.
What is it? Can we make that into an acronym?
I don't know.
GRL. Nah, that sounds too much like TRL. But anyway, so Infiltrator, third-person shooter, does tie into the story, does impact your galactic readiness level. Datapad's what I'm really the most excited about, because Datapad, when back in November, we made some predictions like what we would like to see from an iOS game or from an Android game. And Datapad seems to have all those things that we predicted. Other than mining, revealed how mining is going to be different this time. All we've heard is that mining can be a terrifying experience now because the Reapers can show up while you're mining. What the Datapad does do, it has a full codex of the game, so you'll be able to see all the weapons, all the characters, you know, all the alien species, all the planets, and I guess the codex is going to be slowly updated as you progress through the game. You can also see the map of the universe and what part of the universe the Reapers are attacking in your particular game. So it has an interactive map that kind of follows you through your adventures. So Datapad is just that. It's like a gigantic, you know, data center that links directly to your individual game, which sounds very, very cool to me. I like that idea a lot. So rather than making like, you know, a silly game, they're actually adding something that can contribute to the overall experience, which is good. And it makes my galactic readiness level really, really big.
Cool.
Yeah. So, are you guys going to pick either of these up?
I can't.
Yes. Yeah.
They're ignoring a large section of the market, BioWare.
Now, Matt, you know more about this stuff than I do. Do you think that is just a, like, they're Apple's basically paying them to do that? Or do you think it's because they don't actually write the code?
No, Apple's not paying them.
No, there's not like some sort of marketing tie-in.
EA doesn't have a very big presence in the Android market as it stands right now anyways.
Well, Dead Space is on there. I mean, they just delay everything. It takes forever.
Oh, Dead Space is on Android now?
I think they probably have somebody that already writes Objective-C to make the Apple apps, or they have a company they work with that does Apple apps very easily for them, so they probably can pump these out pretty quickly. And it probably just is more of a resources thing than anything else. Because it is written in, like, the two phone or the two systems are written completely differently. One's Objective-C, one's Java, so.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so the next thing, still talking about some Mass Effect stuff, the big FemShep trailer finally came out yesterday. Matt and I both watched it. Scott, are you avoiding all
I don't hear you talking about that.
I don't know how you can handle. I don't think there's really any spoilers in this conversation about the FemShep trailer.
I don't think so. It was pretty.
Yeah, you know what's pretty solid right now is that I've avoided like pretty much every screenshot, every video. Like I don't even know what the game looks like, what the HUD looks like, what the weapons look like. I have no clue.
Oh my God! How are you doing that?
That's how deep. That's
part of this website and doing that.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, like I don't read any of our Mass Effect articles. I mean, like I love you guys, but I don't read them. You know?
Oh
like,
man, they're really good. You should totally check them out.
Yeah, I mean, like I've looked at
these big words.
I look at the iOS articles, but anything that's like new trailer, new screenshots, like
so that's a good question. Will you download the iOS games and play them before?
Yeah, I will because that's kind of like official material, you know, like released material, you know, like something that is,
sure.
you know, out, you know, and I think I will play the multiplayer component of the demo, but I probably won't play the single player.
We talked about that though. I don't think I'm gonna play the single player component either. I'd rather.
I don't need to be convinced.
Yeah. It's like I'm not trying it out. You know.
Maybe the only reason I would play it is if playing the single player like got you something once the game came out. You know, like
yeah.
That would really be the only reason to do that. But yeah, I've avoided everything.
That's incredible. Well, the we'll try and make it pretty spoiler free, but the FemShep trailer did come out. It finally revealed the female default Commander Shepard that was agreed upon by the community after much fervor over the summer. If you guys remember, yeah, there was quite a lot of insanity going around this summer. First, she was blonde, and then people were like, "We hate blondes. Blondes are terrible. She can't be a blonde." And they're like, "Okay, she's not a blonde.
We'll do something else." That was just the hairstyle. You guys are just voting on the hairstyle.
Yeah, what are you doing? She can't be a blonde. Blondes are dumb. And then everyone went crazy. So now she's a redhead.
Big shocker, nerd.
Yeah, she's a redhead. A redhead with blue eyes. And the model looks phenomenal. They did a really great job. You know, there was a lot of people that obviously this for some reason a lot of people in this franchise that are fans of this franchise are awesome people. And then there's some people that like it's like they crawled out of a sewer with like a pitchfork and they're like covered with tar and they're just like, "We hate everything."
That's the internet, Ash.
Internet.
Yeah.
The sewer is the internet. That is the internet.
We call those people trolls.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is kind of troll. I wonder where that came from. So anyway, these people are like, "Well, the original default model was better. And this one looks too cartoony and blah, 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 blah." I don't agree. I think the model looks great. I think it matches up with Jennifer Hale's voice acting very well. And just, you know, I know, Scott, you're avoiding it, but the footage they keep showing makes shit look crazy. This game is going to be crazy. I think there's going to be – I think things are going to explode in this game. I think there's going to be explosions.
Is my disc just going to melt inside the console and I won't be able to use my Xbox anymore? Because that's what I want to happen.
Yes, that is going to happen. I just want
flames to rise out of my console, you know. I want my eyeballs to melt out.
That's going to happen. Sort of like the end of Indiana Jones when the Ark is opened.
Exactly.
You're going to hit eject on your disc tray and your eyeballs are going to melt into pudding.
There's no going back.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff. Matt, did you – you checked it out, right?
I did.
What did you think?
I mean – what you said, it looks epic. Like it just looks like this is the, you know, like where in the second game you kept going like, holy shit, I think this one's just gonna be like just brain explosions of like nuttiness going on, because it just looks like absolute craziness for, you know, however many hours worth of gameplay that we're gonna be doing. It's what the third act of every game should be, which is just fucking insanity and trying to make sure everything doesn't completely collapse on you. So I think it's going to be good. I've seen absolutely nothing that's made me to doubt that yet. You know, I haven't seen anything that I'm like, everything's just been phenomenal. So I'm excited.
Agreed. Well, I'm glad the community finally got what they were waiting for with this trailer. It seems like most of the people, except for those sewer folk, are very happy with it. So indeed. I'm glad it turned out for the best.
Yeah.
Imagine if it came out and it sucked. Like if it was just like a picture of Commander Shepard, like from a camera angle from behind her, like looking out on the earth, like a silhouette for like 30 seconds. She's like, "Hey,
all right, Blizzard."
Oh yeah. So I don't know a whole lot about this. All I do know is Blizzard is suing Valve over the Dota name. And
what ownership does Blizzard have over Defense?
Defense of the Ancients. Yeah, it's the fact that the original Defense of the Ancients was, you know, created by Blizzard, and then Valve kind of took it over and made their own version of it. And for a while, they were sort of working in harmony, and there was no, you know, no harm, no foul. But now, since this microtransaction model stands to make a whole lot of money for whatever company has the better version of Dota, there is a lot of money at stake, because League of Legends is sort of like what they're aiming to take down. Yeah. League of Legends has become the big dog on the block, who's like, you know, you buy an individual character And I don't even know how many, and pardon me, but there's got to be dozens and dozens of different characters in League of Legends now. And that company, they make a phenomenal amount of money off microtransactions for buying like little hats for the characters and like characters themselves.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Blizzard and Valve are looking to kind of cash in on that. And they're suing each other over Dota, or Blizzard rather is suing Valve over Dota, which I thought was interesting because we did have an article about Blizzard's personality as a company, if a company can have a personality. We had that article up a few weeks ago, so what do you guys think about that?
I'm not even sure how you could be a fan of Blizzard when what would you be a fan of? Like, is there a community outreach? Like, does that company have like an outlet for fans to interact with them, or is it just like a black box? Like, how does this work?
There's a forum on Blizzard, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a, like, the forums on you know, for World of Warcraft, they're very active. From my experience, I haven't been on them in years, but from my experience, they weren't the friendliest of places. They were kind of actually a little bit negative. But you know, I'm sure, I think Blizzard communities are very, very passionate, and that tends to lead to a lot of arguing, you know.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
I mean, it's shitty. It's not shocking. Big companies sue each other all the time. So, I think the shitty news here is that Diablo 3 is getting pushed again.
Yes. So, it was supposed to be March was the last that I heard, the last, like, rumblings of a date for Diablo, and now they're looking at end of June.
When do we stop caring?
I stopped caring a long time ago. Yeah, I think last year.
I was going to say I stopped caring when Torchlight came out.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I'm just, you know, we've talked about this plenty of times, and I'm just getting really tired of this Blizzard like attitude. I think you said it originally, Ash, but you're right. It's like, you know, you can't keep treating your fans like they're insignificant to what you're doing and expect everybody to just to keep coming back time after time after time after time. And it's like, eventually people are going to be like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm done. I'm moving on. I really don't care anymore. I've got plenty of other games to play. It's not 1997 anymore where there's only four big game makers and they're all, you know, they've only got one game coming out every few years. It's like, yeah. I mean, there's shit multiple times a month that comes out, you know, from the scale of Gotham City Impostors to Kingdoms of Amalur, you know, like it's just ridiculous to me that this keeps happening. So I'm just kind of done.
There's so many games to be played, and especially with, you know, like I know that Diablo 3 is not the same thing as Torchlight, but to somebody like me who is just a casual fan of those games,
yeah,
like Torchlight clearly like can easily take the place of a Diablo game.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
and it probably will because I'm not like a hardcore player of that genre, you know, so I really don't care anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Agree.
No, I agree. And like, I don't want to sit here and just knock on Blizzard because they do make some phenomenal stuff, but there is definitely a disconnect with the population and with the community, which I think they have to kind of work on, you know, and we talked about this a little bit on the site, the fact that they kind of canceled BlizzCon for their own personal reasons because they needed to kind of go hardcore into working on Diablo. But there's a lot of fans that like wait, you know, all year to go to BlizzCon and like build costumes all year to go to BlizzCon, and for them just to say, nah, we don't have time to do it, sorry, we got stuff to do, is kind of like, well, you're not really doing BlizzCon for you guys, you're doing BlizzCon for everyone else that supports your company.
Yeah,
you know. And also, you know, Blizzard doesn't go to conventions anymore. They don't go to E3, they don't go to PAX. They don't bring their products there anymore because they said they don't need to. They have their own convention, and now they're not even doing their own convention. So it's like, what are you guys doing? Like, ourselves, but whatever. So we're gonna get some hate mail.
Who cares?
Yeah.
So I still love me some Warcraft 2.
You know,
CD-ROM.
You know what, man? Hate mail, still mail.
It's true.
It's still mail.
It's true.
All right.
Well, we're gonna take a quick break. We've got some music that we will talk about, and we'll come back with some reviews. All right, we'll be right back.
you guys just heard Pushing Onwards from the game BBB BBB, and that is composed by Magnus Paulsen. That is some chiptune awesomeness for you. Please look him up. You can find him all over the place. So definitely check out Magnus Paulsen's stuff and download BBB BBB. So how you guys doing? We're back from our break.
Good.
Sweet.
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to play a whole lot of stuff this week, but we did get to dabble our danglers.
What did you dabble in?
What is
your
that
dangler?
Mean?
What did you dabble your dangler in?
So I did pick up Kingdoms of Amalur: The Reckoning.
Yes.
I picked it up.
And what do you reckon about it?
Well, the deal. I'm very reluctant to kind of delve into a new fantasy world I'm discovering. Like, it's a whole new ball of wax with all new, like, monster names and quests, and world is totally new. And I'm like, I feel kind of at this point like, oh my gosh, do I want to really get into another big fantasy game that's 100 plus hours?
You are the guy who 100%ed Skyrim, so.
I did. And like, and one of our good buddies, Derek, is trying to do the same right now with Skyrim, and he's, you know, been talking to me about it. And I find myself, when I talk about Skyrim, I'm kind of like really negative about it right now. I'm just like, yeah, I don't fucking care. Like, whatever. Like, go do this. It doesn't matter anyway. And I'm like, your wife doesn't even love you in that game. Your wife hates you in that game. She only says two words to you. So I think I've become kind of jaded towards Skyrim. Kingdoms. I probably only put about maybe 4 hours in over the course of the week, after picking it up on Tuesday. And the game looks beautiful. If you played the demo, it actually looks a lot better than the demo. The demo was actually an old build from what we've been hearing.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, so the new build's better, has better lighting, a little bit better shadows, stuff like that. The animation also seems a little bit nicer than the build that was in the demo. As for gameplay and such, Scott played the demo, so you know it's very Darksiders-esque. You played the demo too,
yeah.
Matt? Okay, so you guys know it's a very like Darksiders kind of like light action, simple button combinations. The problem with it is you don't really unlock more moves until you progress into the game. So right now I think I'm only like level 6 or something like that, and I've unlocked like actual new moves for my weapon sets, and that makes it a lot more fun than just like hit X, hit X, hit X over and over again, because that was all you could really do.
So now you're hitting like X, 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 right? Or like,
yeah,
X,
you're hitting
X,
like
y.
X and then like pause and then X. So
right,
there's pauses
yes.
in there.
Uh-huh.
There's pauses in there. So I'm enjoying it. Like it feels, I don't know what the hell's going on in the game. Like it's another open world game. So like you walk in, like you walk out of the very first dungeon you start in, and then there's like 8,000 guys with exclamation points over their head, and they're like, I need help. I've fallen down. I need help. I lost my keys. I need help. I lost my eyeball. And you're like, what the fuck? So like you're basically running around this world just collecting shit for people.
Kind of sounds like an MMO a little bit.
It feels like an MMO. And they're actually working Big Huge Games, I think, right? Is that who's working on it?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm totally getting this wrong, but I think it's Big Huge Games. Big Huge Games
30,
is working on
games?
An MMO.
Sorry. No, you're talking about something else. No, you.
No you. Oh, Lord. No, they're working on an MMO right now based on this license. So it feels, it honestly, in all 100% serious, it feels like an MMO with no other people in it. And that's kind of good and bad. I want to see if it pulls me back in. So I don't know. Right now, I'm kind of, if I had to give it a grade, I would give it a B. But I'm hoping it becomes an A.
Yeah, it's Big Huge. You're both right. It's Big Huge Games, and 38 Studios acquired them in 2009.
Okay.
My biggest fear with this game was that, you know, Ken Ralston, R.A. Salvatore, Todd McFarlane, there were just so many like big names on it that I kind of didn't see how they were, like, it felt like too many cooks in the kitchen, you know, more than anything else. Like, I was like, well, it sounds awesome, and the concept of having all those guys on there would be great, but, you know, I don't know. It seemed like you could get way too many opinions, too.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
My major fear with the game was that it was going to be, like, a very beautiful game with, like, great sort of intangibles, you know? like wrapped around like what might turn out to be very average like gameplay, if that makes any sense.
I heard the combat was really good though. I heard the combat does get like pretty amazing.
No, I mean the combat is definitely, you know.
Yeah. The combat's improving, like the stealth system's really nice. There's a really great executions if you are playing a rogue character, which I'm playing. So if you can manage to sneak up behind like even something almost giant sized, even as of level 5, you can pretty much one-shot it with an execution, awesome, which is really cool.
I have a question for you about this game.
Yeah.
And it's sort of about like progressing from game to game in general. Like, you know, you finish a game, you start something else afterwards. You just finished Skyrim. I'm playing Skyward Sword. I have a friend that's interested in this game who is playing Fable 3 right now. How do you move from one of those games into another game that is also sort of like fantasy hack and slash? Like how does it feel going from Skyrim to this? You know what I mean?
Well, Skyrim was a very slow game, very, very, you know, it took a while to do everything in Skyrim. Even with fast travel, it seemed as though like the combat was slow. You know, you never took on, you know, large groups of enemies. This is definitely, it's a more cartoony kind of whimsical experience compared to Skyrim. Skyrim was like very gritty and real.
Yeah.
And it always, no matter, even if you played like the, you know, this paragon of goodness, it was always a very dark game. It kind of left you feeling, I'm sorry, like some games leave you feeling a little depressed after you play them. That's what Skyrim kind of made me feel like after so many hours. I was like, oh, just get me out of that world. You know, it's like, you're in this snow covered, dreary fucking place for 200 hours. You're like, get me out of here. I want some sunshine, you know?
Yeah, I guess the moods of these two games are different, but just to move from like, here's your sword, here's your armor, kill this dragon, then you go into another fantasy game where it's like, here's your sword, here's your armor, go kill these goblins, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. I typically don't like to do that. And I totally see what you're getting at. It's hard to go from fantasy game to fantasy game. That's maybe why I'm probably not liking Kingdoms as much as I would normally. Me personally, I really like to mix it up. Like if I play a fantasy game or an RPG for a really long time, I like to switch gears and play a shooter for a while. You know, go and play a couple weeks of Gears Horde with your friends. Yeah. You know, the first thing I really played after playing Skyrim, when I played like Trenched and, you know, games like
Saints
that.
Row.
So yeah, I played Saints Row. That was the first thing I played.
Yeah,
so.
I guess maybe the point I'm trying to make is that sometimes I feel like it's good to cleanse the palate. You know, like
yes,
I'm playing Skyward Sword on the Wii, but I also play right now. I'm playing Dirt 3 on the Xbox just to fucking like get all that out of my system. You know, I just play something that's totally like different, and then I can come back to like a shooter or a role playing game or something like that.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I agree with that. It's a palate cleansing. And you play a lot of games, you got it. So final consensus, definitely pick it up if you're looking for like a lighthearted fantasy title. I haven't gotten too big into the plot of the game yet. It seems like there is a very rich world that's filled with, you know, a whole lot of people, a whole lot of intrigue and all of that. But right now I think I've kind of almost reached like RPG my
overload.
Maximum capacity. Yeah, I'm just like, I don't want to learn like what a fucking, you know, Bogart is, or like what a plagued Bogart is. I'm like, I can't. I'm maxed. Yeah. So
I'll tell you what, I mean, since you're playing this game now, and you know, depending on how long you play it leading up to Mass Effect 3 or whatever, like I'd like to hear your review of this game, like Kingdoms of Amalur at 10 hours, Kingdoms of Amalur at 30 hours, at 100 hours, you know, like how your opinion of this game changes as you play more and more of it, you know, because like that's kind of what happened to you in Skyrim. Like, I remember the articles you wrote were like, Skyrim is awesome. Here's how you maximize your experience. Then by the end, like, you know, how you are now, you're like, man, fuck
poisoned.
Skyrim.
Yeah.
I almost
fucking mentally poisoned.
I almost wonder if these, like, that's the downfall of these big, long, epic, no linear story games, is that happens. You get fatigued, essentially, from not being, like, handheld guided. Like, that's probably why Fable plays so well in the same kind of setting, is because it's very, like, here's the story that you're playing, just move through this campaign and then kind of get to the end, you know?
That's why I'm a big advocate of cutting these like 30-hour games with 10-hour games and 5-hour arcade titles, and then going back to like the massive like time consuming games like after you've taken a break.
Awesome. So you think you're gonna keep playing at least though, Ash? It wasn't a waste of $60.
No, yeah, I'll probably beat the main storyline. Cool. Hopefully before March.
Yeah,
Once March happens, it's over. Going to be preoccupied.
All bets are off.
Yep.
Well, let's move into Oscar Challenge Deathmatch Arena.
Yes.
There's a drop for that.
Yeah.
Yes. Oscar Deathmatch.
So last week we did Moneyball, Tree of Life, and Midnight in Paris, and Moneyball was the winner, clearly out of that three. This week I saw The Descendants, which is the George Clooney picture. The Artist, which is actually a silent movie, black and white, and Hugo, which is Martin Scorsese's latest 3D feature. I went into all of these movies with kind of a preconception of what I would think about it, and all three of them completely twisted that preconception, and I came out of it completely different than what I thought. I really honestly was not looking forward to this week a lot. I kind of actually put it off until like Thursday night because I was like, oh, I just don't know if I want to watch any of these movies. Like Hugo was the only one I was kind of interested in. And it just wasn't really like none of them had grabbed me. So I started off, I watched The Artist. Now, if I describe this movie to you and I say silent movie in black and white, kind of an art house film.
You know, until you said art house film, I totally pictured like the old 50s ones where the guy's playing the piano and like the words come on
that
the screen.
Is, no, that is exactly how the movie runs. It's shot. Shot, and that's not the 50s. It's like the 30s, but it's shot. It's shot and plays exactly like a silent film for the first two acts. The first two acts are really kind of this amazing story about it follows this silent actor. It's a movie about a silent movie actor who is like the biggest star in the 30s and is making all these movies and super famous and whatever. And then the first talking movie gets made and basically his life kind of crumbles after that. And it just follows his story. It is super engaging and just a gorgeous movie and shot just extremely well. I literally went into this movie thinking it would be boring and horrible, and I came out going like, wow, that was actually a really awesome movie experience. Like, there's not anything else like it. I think it's at the Enzian right now in Orlando, you guys, and I would completely recommend going and seeing it at the Enzian. It's worth seeing. It's weird to say this because it's not like a Michael Bay or something, but it's worth seeing in the theater on a screen.
At this point, I don't know that Michael Bay is.
Well, you know what I mean. Like, at this point. this actually is a really awesome movie experience, and it is very gorgeously shot. And while it does sound, and I won't lie, like the first 20 minutes of the silent movie, you're kind of like, it's like quaint. It just feels like you're watching a silent movie. But then as the story progresses, and once it gets, especially towards the third act, it's just an awesome, awesome story. What it really proves is what good actors and good direction can do in a film with there's no words, you know? I mean, there's barely a lot of the talking that they do. They don't even do the subtitle thing. Like they only subtitle it on occasion.
Like when it's important.
Yeah. So like John Goodman's in the movie and you'll see him, like he'll talk a bunch and they don't ever put his words up. But like when the actors talk on occasion, they'll put their words up if it's like an actory kind of movie thing. It's just,
and do the words actually cut, like it's a separate screen
and
the words
it's
are there,
completely
just like
as a silent movie got done. Yeah.
Great. That's awesome.
But it is really just brilliantly done. I highly recommend going to see it in the theater. So if you guys get a night or an evening out, it actually is probably a really good date movie too, you know, for Valentine's Day. It's pretty like, it's got some romance and stuff in it. It's good. So the second movie I went and saw, was Hugo, and I went and saw it in the theater in 3D. And I'm just going to say, I'm not a huge 3D proponent. I don't think it's bad. I'm not against it, but I'm not like totally for it either. I have figured out when you should go see a 3D movie. And this is the criteria. When a name like, Martin Scorsese or, let's play the drinking game, Avatar. What the fuck? I just blanked on his name.
Steven Spielberg.
Or Spielberg, sure. But no, the guy who made Avatar.
James Cameron.
When you see a director's name like that on the film, go see it in 3D. Because this movie is just fucking gorgeous and amazing.
This movie is kind of like a love letter to 3D, right? To filmmaking.
Yeah. This movie, my preconception on this one was, oh, it's a kids movie, it's animated, which was funny because you guys said it to me before the show. I thought it was animated and I thought it was a kids movie. It is not animated at all. There's CG in it, but it's not even remotely animated. It's completely all live. It follows the story of this boy who lives in a train station who basically stumbles upon Georges Méliès, who made the really famous silent movie about the moon that has a rocket shot up and it hits the moon's eye. It's a super famous. It's one of the first artsy movies ever made. And it just is a really amazing story about this kid and about movies. And it really, just like The Artist, which The Artist is a total love letter to movie making, or I would say The Artist is a total love letter to acting and to the power of acting, Hugo is a love letter to movies and the history of movies and the general, you'll come out of it feeling like, holy shit, movies are awesome. They really do transport you to a new place. And it's kind of all about how movies are dreams on screen, you know, and it actually talks about the history of movies and what the first ever movie shown was, which was about a train that came into a station and that's all it was. And then it talks about Georges Méliès and then it talks about when sound got introduced to movies it doesn't talk about sound. It talks about when acting got introduced and when stories got made. And it's a really amazing love letter to movies. And it's just awesome to watch a director like Scorsese take something like 3D and take something totally not usually what his style is. I mean, he's, you know, known for, for such a gritty style. And this is such just a gorgeous, fun, great movie. And Sacha Baron Cohen is in it and he's kind of the comic relief and also somewhat the antagonist and just really good. The one thing about this movie, Scott, that you will like, that I liked, is the main kid who plays Hugo is the main kid who's going to play Ender and in Ender's Game. Thumbs up on that kid. I think he's going to be awesome. He was fantastic in Hugo. So
that's great. I can't wait.
And the final movie that I saw was The Descendants, which is a George Clooney picture. And I want to ask you guys, what did you think? You saw the previews for this, right?
Yeah.
What did you think it's about?
It looked like George Clooney in a Tommy Bahama shirt hanging out by a pool with a bunch of teenagers. So I think it's about pedophilia.
All right. Do you have a serious answer for me?
That was it. That's my serious answer.
I thought it was about divorce, because that's what all of the previews kind of lead you to believe, that George Clooney is going through a midlife crisis essentially, and he's going through a divorce and his kids are there and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That is.
Oh, those are his kids.
Yeah. They're his kids. That is not.
Oh, so that makes it a whole different movie.
It is about that. Yeah, I know. Good joke. It is about that.
I'm watching the trailer right now. The trailer seems pretty seems pretty heavy, the material.
Yeah. The topic is really heavy, but that's what it is about. But the reality of the situation is that the movie begins with him in a hospital at the side of the bed of his wife, who got in a boating accident and is in a coma. And then as the movie progresses, you find out that she wanted a divorce from him and that she cheated on him. And then it goes through this whole story about his family and his kids and how they're dealing with his wife, who now he kind of hates because he finds out she's been cheating on him for a while with this other guy who plays a big part in the movie too, which is Matthew Lillard. And it took a total turn from what I thought was going to be a really standard movie about, ooh, family and loss or family and divorce or whatever, and made it this really emotional piece about forgiveness and moving forward with life in the face of just epic proportions of horribleness, you know?
Do I see that the bartender from Alcatraz is in this film as well?
Yeah, he's the grandpa. He's like he's the his wife's dad. Who's the woman right. dying? It's his her dad.
Gotcha.
And it's a really great story. This one I would say Netflix. I don't think you guys would love it that much, but it is a really, really good story. A lot better than I thought it would be. I kind of went into this week thinking all three of these movies would be kind of like, meh, and I'd kind of come out going like, well, I liked Hugo the best. But really, all three of them completely blew me away. This is what I assume is going to be the strongest week probably that I'm going to have, because I know what's up next week.
But you can only choose one movie.
Next week is like... This is why it's the last week, because it's War Horse, which I could give two shits about. It's The Help, which I could give no shits about. And Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close or whatever, which is about a fucking autistic kid dealing with his dad who died in 9/11. I'm like, why do I want to see this? Anyways.
Yeah.
You don't.
I don't. It sounds horrible.
Hey, yeah. Real quick, can we talk real fast about your shit rating system? Yeah. Like, is it worse?
Yeah, it's worse.
Is it worse to give no?
Yeah.
Like, if you give no shits about something, is it worse than giving two shits
yeah,
about
like,
something?
If I'm willing to go take a poop twice to see this movie, yeah. then that's better than me not even wanting to sit on the toilet.
Because I know that people say I couldn't give two shits about this, but then if you do give two shits
yeah,
about
I don't know.
It,
it's,
I mean, does that?
It's my weird system. I like shitting. I enjoy pooping.
I really think you just invented a new rating system for like a movie blog. You know, like, I give two shits about this movie. You know, like, I couldn't give two shits, so I give no shits at all. Like, I really
I
want to see
shits
this happen
back
now
for this movie.
Yeah,
have you been to that
I want two
site?
Shits back.
Multishits.com.
Multishits.
We totally just trademarked
don't
that
take
right
that.
Here.
That's
on this
copyright.
Yes.
Yeah. Multishits. I just mailed it to myself. Hillbilly copyright.
Yeah. Poor man's copyright.
So I can only choose one. Here's where I'm torn, guys.
Yes.
Do I choose the one that I think is going to win, period, or the one that I think was better?
Well, what was the original purpose of your... Well, let's hear both, then.
The Artist is going to get the Oscar, period.
Okay.
It's just going to win. It's up for, like, 11 awards. It's a phenomenal movie. And it's a love letter to acting, and the people voting on it are a bunch of actors. So it's,
okay, so
it's clearly going to get
the
award. Hugo. Hugo okay. was like inspiring and fun and just like, I mean, I would say The Artist is probably technically a better movie. Like it's got better content to it. It's a better story. And it's probably acted a little better, but Hugo made me feel better when I finished it. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Like Hugo was like,
absolutely.
I came out of it and I was like, that was awesome. Like I really enjoyed that. But The Artist was like, that's a fucking award-winning movie, like, clearly. So
cool.
I think The Artist, my real pick for the Oscars would be The Artist, if you're trying to bet on it, you know? The Artist is going to win.
Yeah.
But Hugo was a really great movie. And if you can go catch it in 3D, it's probably going to be out of the theaters really soon. If you can catch it in 3D, I do recommend it. Scorsese does an amazing job with the 3D. There are scenes, there's a scene where he pans the camera like out over top of the boy and he's standing on top of a clock tower and it's like vertigo inducing. Like it's crazy how
cool.
well it's shot and just what it looks like.
That's
and
cool.
It's not just like, whoa.
No. And when it does that kind of stuff, but in a way that feels natural, like he moves through scenes and stuff will move towards you while he's moving through scenes, but it's not like that. It's not doing this kind of thing. It's just like it's like passing you while you're moving through. So
all right, that's
definitely
cool.
Recommended. But yeah, The Artist is the winner this week, I guess, probably. So it was a
all
tough
right.
one. It was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. All three movies are excellent and I definitely recommend seeing them all, but The Artist go see in the theater, and Hugo go see in 3D if you can.
Cool. So next week is the last week of your Oscar
next
challenge.
Week is last week, and it's my couldn't give a shit right, or I give two shits week, which is War Horse by Spielberg,
yep.
The Help, which looks like the most racist thing I'm going to watch in a long time, and the autism movie.
Yep.
Loud
and close. Loud and close,
whatever it is.
All right.
Good stuff.
So let's talk about Hero Academy.
Cool. All right. So I am not a big cell phone gamer, but in recent years they have gotten a lot better than they used to be. So there's actually some really quality stuff coming out. I'm also a big fan of turn-based strategy. I've always loved it. And there aren't very many good turn-based strategy games anymore. And I heard through this about Hero Academy kind of through the grapevine. And it is made by Robot Entertainment, who did Orcs Must Die.
Yes.
So first of all, if you haven't played Orcs Must Die, it's awesome. It is also another strategy game, not turn-based. But Hero Academy is actually super fun. It is a completely free to download, completely free to try. It is microtransaction based, so you can buy some bells and whistles for your account if you want to. There are different army types. Right now, the game launched with just two different army types. There's like the a royal army, basically knights and wizards and archers and that stuff. And there's a dark elves army, which you have to purchase for a couple dollars if you want to play as the dark elves. But how the game works is it's set up almost like a chessboard. It's animated very well. Every turn you have different randomized pieces will be given to you at the bottom part of your map, which means you can deploy certain units based on however many move actions you have. So let's say you start out with like 8 move actions. You can deploy a couple troops or maybe upgrade those troops or heal those troops if you get a potion. But whatever you receive is completely randomized. And the goal is to either eliminate the entire enemy team or destroy their crystals. The thing that's cool is it's turn-based and it can be played over the course of several days with strangers or with friends. And it's set up sort of like Words with Friends, where one person takes an action and then your phone will notify you when the other team has taken their action. So you can kind of take your time. You can like, you know, play it over the course of, you know, a week if you need to, and to get a match done, you know, play it, you know, on your lunch break for 15 minutes with someone, or you can, you know, pace it out however you'd like. But so, it is like really, really strategic.
I have an immediate question that maybe you can answer for me. I don't know how much you've played, but
yeah,
this game is sort of like microtransaction based. Is it also pay to win?
No. There's nothing you can buy that is going to give you an advantage over your opponent. Basically, each army comes equipped with the same stuff. It's not like Magic the Gathering where you can like, you know, basically stack your deck with really cool stuff. Each mm-hmm. army has the exact same things. It's randomized when they come out to be able to be played, sort of like you're drawing from a deck. But no one really has an advantage. The things you're going to buy, microtransaction, you're going to buy different avatar like icons, colors for your army. So instead of like being default blue or default red, you can buy like black.
So it's more like aesthetic choices.
Yeah. Or if you,
and the only thing you mentioned that you would only pay for like a new army, but having that army doesn't necessarily make you better. It just gives you more options when you play with other people.
Yeah, they're trying to make the armies, from what I've read, as balanced as possible. Because mm-hmm. Right now, like, let's to give you an idea of like the units that exist within like the royal army. There's like a knight type character who, you know, has limited movement, is melee based, very hardy. There's an archer who's a lot weaker, can fire at a distance. There's a wizard who can attack in like an area of effect, who's also very squishy. There's a cleric who can heal and resurrect your units. And then there's like an assassin who moves very, very quickly and gets a double strike. So you are trying to maneuver these units across like a chessboard and take out the enemy in a really, you know, traditional turn-based strategy fashion.
Sounds very Shining Force.
It is very Shining Force. And then like, you know, as you take your turns in the bottom, you'll get like an armor icon. And if you want to use your move points to upgrade a certain unit, you can just like basically drag and drop the helmet onto the knight, and the knight will be equipped with a helmet and he'll have a little bit more health. Or the wizard, you can drop a scroll on and he'll have an upgrade to his firepower. So it is really well done, really polished. I don't have any complaints about it. It's completely free. Like Matt was saying the other day about
Triple Town.
What was it called? Double Fisting? Triple Town? Not Double Fisting.
Whoa.
I'm
Hold
sorry.
On. Back it
Wrong
up.
Game. you know, you don't mind paying for something if you really enjoy it. And I think like I would put $10 into this game and get like a bunch of skins and another army just because I actually like it. You know, yeah. $10 is $10. So Totally worth it.
I feel
so definitely pick up Hero Academy. Look me up. Legs are broken.
I feel like these microtransaction games work on this scale for me. When they're small, kind of fun, quick play games, and not necessarily when I'm investing like a ton of time. You know, like when I'm playing, I don't play this game, but if I'm playing Call of Duty, like I want the full experience while I'm playing it. Like I don't want to, hold on, let me back out, get a gun, let me purchase this thing, like, because it kind of pauses the action and you're kind of like getting things. And but whereas like a Triple Town or this kind of game, I feel like it works so well because I'm getting time out of it and it's a fun game to play, but stopping and buying stuff or adding things to my you know, armory isn't like pausing all of the action and making me feel like I'm stepping out to go get something that otherwise I wouldn't have in the game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I think it works on some scales, and I think it's proving to work really well on a phone. Plus, on a phone, which I don't know if you notice or if you have this, Ash, but I think it all goes through iTunes and Google. It all goes through Google's like accounts. So when I want to buy something, it's not like I have to like get my credit card out, do this or that. I can kind of just go like, oh, cool, it's $2. Yeah, $2 purchase, and then it just goes through the thing, everything that's already set up in my account, and then it's all purchased and it's in my game within a few seconds, and it's not like some weird long process to get stuff to happen.
Yes. So anyway, definitely go pick it up. Go pick up Hero Academy. It's easy to link up with your friends. You can use your Twitter account, and you can also use your Facebook account to play with people that you know, as opposed to playing with people that are strangers, because it does have a fine random opponent option, but it is very easy to link up with people that you know. So
does this game have any type of single player functionality or like a campaign to progress through by yourself, or do you only get to play with other people?
It's only against other people right now, so there is no AI whatsoever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm going to go through a comic really fast, but I wanted to talk about this because it was also on my read list, much like We Three last week, and it's called Fear Agent, and I'm holding it up currently for the dudes. It is written by Rick Remender, who did the X-Force run that I was in love with and named Comic of the Year, and it's drawn by Tony Moore, who's the original artist on Walking Dead. It's an Image comic, Dark Horse comic, so it's independent artist book, but creator owned kind of thing. It follows the story of a fear agent, which is basically an alien hunter, and he's a drunk and he's from Texas, so he talks with like a southern drawl and everything, but kind of more like a Rick Perry kind of attitude, you know.
Oh, okay.
All right.
But a total drunk and kind of a loser at the same time. And it follows his adventure through... This is the first trade. There's, I think, seven...
Looks like there's like four or five. Yeah,
there's a bunch of them. It's over now. The trades, all the trades are out that are going to be out. So it's not like an ongoing series. Okay. It's ended. But it is frigging awesome. It's really, really, really good. Rick Remender is quickly becoming one of my favorite writers. He just writes really well. Tony Moore's art is fantastic. And if you needed any more kind of push for it, the other artist that switches out with Tony Moore on this is Jerome Pena, which you might remember from X-Force, that first book I showed you guys that you were like, oh my God, this looks gorgeous. It's like a painting.
Yeah.
He's the other artist on this book. So it's Tony Moore and Jerome Pena, which is like an amazing amount of talent on one book. It's just kind of really cool. It's all about the follies of this guy, Heath Houston, who's hunting aliens. Things go wrong for him constantly. There's tons of cliffhangers, really awesome endings that lead you right into the next book. The art is very like 50s sci-fi. So like he wears like a big glass bubble helmet. You know, the suit's like this weird, like orange, like old version of space suit. The rockets are all kind of like old timey rocket looking. It's just really, really well done sci-fi, with just a really cool twist of what it looks like. So,
it sounds amazing.
Yeah, Scott.
Yeah, it sounds pretty
awesome. Scott, this is like right up your wheelhouse, and I'm actually gonna say up your wheelhouse. I'm actually gonna say don't buy the first one yet. I'll send it to you so you can read it. You guys can share it, and you can get hooked, and then buy the rest of them, because this is really, really, really solid writing and really great art and just a really cool story.
Awesome.
So, I'm glad that it's good.
Yeah, the whole series is out. I actually picked up the second one yesterday when I picked up my comics. I haven't gotten to read it yet. Whole series is out, so go pick it up. It's called Fear Agent. You know, support creator-owned comics because this is them putting their heart and soul and money into something that, you know, hopefully takes off and does well. And Rick Remender is definitely worth it. So Fear Agent, it's on Dark Horse. Go pick it up. Volume 1.
Cool.
Awesome. Very
Looks
cool.
Great.
So actually, let me finish. I'll just do my last comic pick really quick, and then Ash, you can talk about Star Wars. I got back into my subscriptions, like I said, this week. I picked up a few books. I picked up a couple of the 52s that I'd fallen behind on, Batwoman and Batgirl. Both were good. I picked up the new X-Men book, which is actually pretty good. And I picked up another book called Fatal, which is Ed Brubaker's new series, which almost was my pick of the week. It was really close. Fatal is about it's like a noir story. It's much like his other stuff, which was Criminal, and I'm blanking on the other name of the book that I read, but it's really good, so pick it up if you see it. But my pick of the week, number one pick, was Conan the Barbarian, number one, written by Brian Wood and drawn by Becky Cloonan. Brian Wood did DMZ and Demo, and he's done a couple Marvel books. He did Northlanders, which is an awesome Viking comic. If you ever wanted to read about Vikings, Northlanders is fantastic. Cool. And then this is based on a short story about Conan that was only 20 pages long, and he's turning it into an ongoing series. Wow. And it follows Conan, who at this point is still just Conan the Sumerian, I guess is what they called him at the time. And the first book is a little verbose, but the art, I picked it mainly. Becky Cloonan has worked with Brian Wood on a few books, Demo being the biggest. And her artwork is just awesome. It's a really great style. Let me see if I can find a cool little book of panels. There's a lady for Ash.
Yeah.
But her artwork is just phenomenal. And
it looks really good.
It's really great, and it's really cool to see a new... I've always wanted to read Conan. I've never really had a good entry point, because they've always been kind of long-running. And I usually just... You're like my Ryan. I just skip over your jokes now.
Yeah.
So when they rebooted it with Brian Wood and Becky Cloonan attached, I went ahead and picked it up, and it's absolutely worth it. So it just came out this week. You can still go pick up the first issue. Conan the Barbarian, written by Brian Wood. His adventure starts, he kind of just jumps on a ship and is running from guards, and it goes through his story of like how he was in prison and where he was coming from, and it's just done really well. So go pick it up. It's another creator-owned comic. It's done on Dark Horse. So Brian Wood, Becky Cloonan doing Conan the Barbarian. Number one pick this week. Check it out.
Cool.
Awesome.
I'm glad you're doing those. I miss comic books very much.
It is available digitally, too, on the iOS Dark Horse app.
Which is why I need to get an iPad ASAP. Oh, all right. So the last review of sorts is we've been kind of doing these updates about our progress in Star Wars, The Old Republic. And this morning, actually, bright and early, because I woke up feeling pretty awful, I finally finished up level 50 on my Sith Warrior on Star Wars The Old Republic. And I had actually, before I went to Denver, which was 2 weeks ago, I was 49 and three quarters. So it took me over 2 weeks to get that last little bubble of experience.
Man. Oh, my God.
And I'm going to tell you why. Because last time I played, I actually finished up my class storyline. And then as soon as I finished my class storyline, I kind of lost all motivation to play. Because my story was done.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I'm done. Like, I was still on Corellia. And I still was doing the Corellian story. But the Corellian story was like, go and shut down these generators and then kill this guy. And I had done that many, many times in the past. Mm-hmm. I still really enjoy the gameplay. I really feel like it's very, very solid. But I found myself completely turned off by it as soon as my class quest was done. And I literally dinged 50. I teleported to fleet. I bought my new skills. And then I was like, well, now what do I do? Like, what do I do with this? I'm like, I can PvP. I can try and do some flashpoints. But why am I going to do that? Like, I don't really have this burning desire to have like the best gear in the universe. I could go back and finish up like old quest chains and stuff I hadn't done just to see like the whole big story. But for the most part, I'm just kind of like, man, like is it MMOs or is it me or I don't know what, but I'm not going to deactivate it. I still enjoy playing and, you know, I still want to play other character classes.
That's what I was going to ask.
I don't know.
We still all need to play together. Yeah, I know. Too, you know, like that's half the reason we started.
I've been
playing.
Woefully behind on my Star Wars playing, but I was going to ask if you have the drive to try the other classes, like, do you want to see the other stories? Is that pushing you to play, or is it just kind of like you feel like it's going to be kind of a lot of the same with some different story points?
I really want to try Trooper because I hear the Republic stories are 100% different. I mean, the problem is I'm playing with Christina now on my alternate character, her main character, and we're about level 15-ish, 16-ish on the alternate characters. And I'm like, well, like, while my class quest is very different from the Sith Warrior as an agent, a lot of the world quests are identical. Sure. All the world quests are identical. Yeah. So, you know, if you're on Alderaan, no matter what, you're going to get the same Alderaan quests. So I've already done those, and I already know, like, the twists and the turns and all that stuff. But I hear if you, you know, do them on the Republic side, they're 100% different. So I do think if I play again, it's not going to be for a while. And I mean, you know, if I really like really play for an extended period of time, it's not going to be for a while. And it probably will be on the Rebellion side unless I'm playing with you guys.
Yeah.
So
I think maybe the part of the game that maybe all of us are lacking is the group part of the MMO.
Definitely.
Like the second M in MMORPG is maybe what we're missing right now, you know?
That would possibly make haven't really been playing with each other, and like I know when I play when I do play with Christina, we have a good time because we're, you know, we're grouping for quests and things like that, and my experience from 1 to 50 was pretty much a solo experience. Like I ran into you guys a handful of times, maybe at the most, but for the most part I was like just plowing through it, seeing what the story was, and the story was brilliant. I loved it. It was like a really solid BioWare story, and I'm glad that I played it. But it's like now that I'm at 50, I'm like, what the fuck do I do? All right, so anyway, overall experience, Star Wars 1 to 50, a lot of fun. I encourage everyone to pick it up, at least give it a try. If you have time in your life to plow through 1 through 50 in the free month, treat it just like a single player experience. If you have friends, then go ahead and hang on to it and do some quests and stuff once you hit 50 and go into some dungeons.
And the flashpoints are still awesome. I mean, like,
yeah,
those
they're still good
quality.
And I'm keeping my subscription for a while just to see what comes next. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Do they have a release update yet for like new stuff or no?
Well, they've been previewing in their blog, like they've been showing videos about like stuff they plan to implement in future versions of the game. So there's like videos available for that kind of thing.
Cool.
Good deal. All right. We will be back with our Twitter question of the week. So hang in there.
Sweet.
We are back with our weekly Twitter question for episode 49. The question was, what is the nerdiest Valentine's Day gift you've ever received? And are nerdy gifts still romantic? Let's start with our own answers for a couple seconds here.
Okay.
Scott, I want to put you on the spot. Have you ever given and or received a nerdy gift for Valentine's Day?
Not that I can think of, like a nerdy gift. I don't know that I've ever gotten or received a nerdy gift for Valentine's Day. I will say that Jen got me once for a different occasion. I think it was like the new Super Mario Brothers for the Nintendo DS. And I thought that was awesome. Like, I was like, this is amazing. I can't believe you went out and picked a game out for me. Like, that's incredible. 'Cause she's not really like
It was the first and last game you ever got from her.
Yeah, I mean, it was. Like that was actually kind of cool that, I mean, you know, I feel like it's hard to pick out a game for somebody who plays a lot of games. You know what I mean? Definitely. Like, how are you supposed to know, like, what they're interested in or if they played it or not or if they're even, like, into it or whatever? And I just thought it was cool that she took the time to do it. So I guess that's my answer in a nutshell. Yeah.
That is cool.
I agree.
Ash, what about you?
Oh, I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever... There's a really famous story about my wife that I still tease her about. And it was like when we were first dating before we got married, she was living with me already for a couple years. And it was Valentine's Day. And I could tell she had just like stopped at Walmart on the way home from work and just had like a bag of like emergency present crap. And it was like fuzzy slippers and like a new pair of underwear. And I literally just like opened it and I was just like, is this real? I was like, are these really the presents? And she felt so bad. Because I think I had done something like really nice that year and like, I was getting like, you know, Walmart slippers. And so now we have like a slipper joke. She's like, oh, I'm going to get you slippers again. But it wasn't for Valentine's Day, but one of the first things we ever bought together, I want to say it was an anniversary. We split a TV. And this was before we were contractually obligated to do things. Yeah, it's this TV we still have. It's our nice Samsung.
No, I meant like after you split it. It was a joke.
Oh, he actually physically split the TV. Ouch. So yeah, that was the first thing, jokes. And that was like we bought that for each other. So it was like we're going to get this TV, and we split it, and that was kind of romantic because then we had it together. So. Yeah. Cool. I think nerdy gifts can be romantic. I think like it's incredibly, and I'm sorry, it's incredibly cliche to be like, I got your chocolates and this flower, whereas you could get something that's actually functional. I guess that makes me not romantic, but.
Well, I think with the nerdy gifts, I think the value in it for me is it's like the thought that counts. Like the effort that you put into doing something nerdy, like knowing that I like nerdy things, I think that's the clincher, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I didn't say mine.
Yeah, we're just leaving you out there.
It's cool. I don't think. So, my way of thinking about it is that I don't think we've really gotten specifically nerdy gifts, but we are kind of classically nerdy about Valentine's Day because we don't actually celebrate. We've literally in 8 years never celebrated on Valentine's Day because it's like, and there's such nerdy reasons because everything's crowded. Everything costs too much.
It's difficult.
And it's just like, it just never, she also was retail for a long time and like making sure that we were both free on that night was never really totally feasible. So we always do like something really whatever, like the weekend before or the weekend after. And we just never really celebrated on the day of.
P.S. That's totally like a 30 Rock answer. Everything's crowded. There's too many people here.
Dude, I watched the 30 Rock about Valentine's Day, and I was like, oh my God, we're Liz Lemon and her boyfriend.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Let's just go home and like eat Ben and Jerry's. It's like awesome. You know?
By the way, that episode that just played this week was the Valentine's Day one, and they go to IKEA, and it's the most amazing thing ever.
But I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait.
It's awesome. That's so let's great. Get into our responses, Ash.
To the Twitter wall.
Yeah. All right. So our first one was from Allison Thresher, who we had on the site last year talking about gender and gaming. Allison Thresher works for Harmonix. She used to be Harmonix community manager, and now she is one of the programmers and choreographers for Dance Central.
Hello.
So it's awesome that she took the time to respond to us. And she says... absolutely. Thoughtful gifts are romantic, no matter how nerdy. And I agree with her. I don't think, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying, you don't necessarily have to get something that's traditional, meaning a piece of jewelry or, you know, a chocolate or a flower. If you know someone, I think Valentine's Day is a good excuse to get someone something they like. I get in trouble for this a lot. My wife tells me I'm not romantic. Shocker. But
penis.
Yeah, the whole idea of romance, it just feels so contrived sometimes. Like what am I supposed to put on a fucking bow tie and like prance around the house?
I would argue that though, because you like take her on trips and you guys do a lot together.
I try, man.
Fucking marriage.
I know. Wives and rich lives.
Well, I guess maybe the point is that like it's weird to create a day where you're like, today you have to be romantic.
Yeah.
You know, it's like maybe I don't feel like being romantic because it's Tuesday. You know what I mean? Like,
and I was gonna say a note about the jewelry. I think you can be nerdy and still do a gift like jewelry. Like I bought Melissa a necklace from Etsy for Christmas that was like handmade, you know? Yeah. And it was cheap. It was like $40. It wasn't an expensive piece of jewelry. It was a really cheap necklace that was like gold something or other. And it had like two little birds and it had our initials on it. And it was like totally nerdy because it was handmade and everybody's seen it. But like that thing got the best reaction like out of Christmas, and like her friends all look at it and they're like, oh, that's so cute and blah, blah, blah. And like, I think if you, like you said, Ash, if you get something that makes sense for the person, no matter how nerdy it is, it should still be romantic, you know?
Indeed.
You shop for the person.
Why don't you guys read through some of our other replies?
Scott?
Okay, I'm going to butcher somebody's name now, and I always feel great about doing that. Melina, I'm not even going to try with the last name, who is at DevilYoko666.
I love that.
Yeah. Says, I've got ME1 for V-Day years ago. It was, quote, romantic for me. And I think, yeah, that's exactly right. Quote, romantic is really in the eye of the beholder. So, like, if your loved one knows that you're a huge Mass Effect fan and that's what they get you for Valentine's Day, then that's awesome.
I shit you not. I told my wife this year, I'm like, hey, I have an idea. Like, why don't we celebrate Valentine's Day on Sunday so we could spend like the whole day together? And she's like, and she's looking at me like, what do you have up your sleeve? And
clearly
I'm like,
the Sunday prior, right?
Yeah. So we're going to celebrate on the 12th. And then I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, and then, you know, on Tuesday when I get home from work, I'll be playing that Mass Effect demo. And she's like, you motherfucker. So we have an arrangement. I am allowed to be left alone to play that demo until the sun comes up.
My wife does not get here until the 16th, so I will be playing the demo because I'm all alone.
Game on.
Last up.
Sad.
Yeah, it's all right. Last up.
I'll talk about the demo.
Waka waka. We're just full of them today. Oh, man. Last up, our friend Dr. Gar, who I should say needs a Kickstarter of his own to repopulate his nerdy life. He's the buddy that we posted on Twitter about getting all his shit stolen, which is ridiculously crappy. So,
yeah.
He says I recently gifted my fiance my old Xbox and a copy of Gears. If that's not romance, then I don't want to love.
Indeed.
That's pretty awesome. And this is actually kind of born out of, for some reason, my wife got really interested in playing Gears of War Horde. And my buddy Derek, his girlfriend, got really interested in playing Gears of War Horde. And then slowly this female contingent of Gears of War Horde players is like growing amongst our small little community. And it's awesome. They're really enjoying it. And it's a great way to play cooperatively with your friends and loved ones. So I think that is kind of romantic to plop down on the couch and shoot some grubs. Mm. Why not?
Yeah, I would agree.
Good stuff.
So is it short one today for the Twitter wall, but that's all right. We had a lot of other shit going on. So yeah, you guys ready to be jealous of me?
Why is that?
Yes.
I get to go see Ghost Rider 2 before anybody else does in the movie theater.
Oh, what? Nicolas Cage.
In 3D for free.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. The perks of being a Marvel employee.
Perks of being a Marvel employee.
Now, when you have the same conversation with us and it's Avengers, then jealousy will kick in. I have sympathy.
And that will happen. So I was all excited because I was like, I'm going to get to talk about Ghost Rider on the podcast next week because I'm seeing it on Thursday. But oh well, we ruined it for each other, Scott.
What's that?
Don't bother listening. It's fine. We're doing a podcast together.
I'm on board with that. But the Ghost Rider. I was thinking about the fact that this is a big milestone for us because our next episode that we record is going to be rated NA 50.
50.
Oh, man.
Which is episode pretty 50. Awesome.
Hello.
What are we going to do? We're going to have something special.
We're also like a year and 4 months into being a website.
Which is pretty incredible.
We're like real people.
That shit. And we've got some sneaky shit up our sleeves too right now.
Yeah, we do. We're building something extraordinary. And it has nothing to do with the size of our galactic readiness level. It is something else entirely. But so as always, thank you guys for tuning in. This is the Rated NA podcast for nerdappropriate.com. And this was episode 49. You can always contact us, nerdappropriate on Twitter.
Facebook.com/nerdappropriate. And Matt, Scott, and Ash at nerdappropriate.com. And I think we're on iTunes. We're on Zune. We're on podcast.org.
We just made that up. Go there anyway. Look for us.
Any place that fine podcasts are sold.
Yes.
So, all right. That's it for the podcast.
Reverse, all right.
You brought it all back.
We will see you guys in 2 weeks.
Goodbye.
Adios.
In action. Wait.